Hello, and welcome to the 10th episode of Season 7 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Now, this is our second episode about alternative laundries, I believe, Graham. The posh end, isn't it?
Yes, Ray. I thought it was time for a bit of the high life.
Casinos and auctions, high-end luxury goods. Lots to enjoy there.
I agree. Shall we start with casinos? I reckon there may be a few of our listeners who are not well acquainted with the workings of said casinos. So this might well turn into an explainer of the games you can gamble on as much as the means by which you can use them to launder money.
And as is often the case, it's been quite a learning curve for us as well, given that neither of us are habitués of casinos either.
Nice word, Ray. No,
oh, thanks, mate.
We're not. Oddly, I've only ever been to a casino once or maybe twice, and that was in Birmingham about 22 or so years ago.
How did you get on?
Well, to be honest, Ray, the first time I went, I just mainly watched other people because I was a bit nervous and I wanted to get the hang of it.
Uh-huh. And the second time?
Well, I won about 200 and odd pounds. So I stopped playing there and then. And when I got home, I said to my wife I'd won this money on the roulette wheel. And we used the money to buy my kids a really, really nice climbing frame with all the accessories, which we put in our back garden.
So you're a net winner then?
Yes, I somewhat boringly determined never to go back. So I will always be up in respect of my only real foray into the world of gambling.
And I don't imagine there are too many people who can make that boast, Graham.
I think you're probably right, Ray. Oddly, if there's one thing that's certain about people who launder money in casinos is that they will never come out with more than they went in for reasons we're about to discover.
True, except for the most basic of all casino laundering techniques.
Which is?
Well, go into the casino with a big pile of dirty cash, exchange it for chips, wander around for a while enjoying the view with those chips in your pocket, then cash them in for a nice casino check, which you then go and pay into your bank account. And if you're asked, claim that it's winnings.
Well, yeah, that's easy, if a bit obvious.
It is, yeah, and that's the point. Most casinos have cottoned on to that one. But genuine gambling winnings are a legitimate source of funds. So you will see gamblers banking winnings with quite detailed evidence provided by the casino sometimes to support the legitimacy.
Yes, that's true. Getting more detailed documentary support obviously takes this basic typology of cashing out without playing out of the picture.
So where shall we go next to find a laundering opportunity?
How about the roulette wheel?
Oh, why not? Most people will have at least seen one on the TV or the movies, so the concept shouldn't be entirely foreign.
No, but I do think, Ray, we should start off with a brief explainer on how they work and the odds involved particularly, because that's going to be important when trying to understand the laundering techniques.
Okay, then. Well, a roulette wheel is composed of 36 numbers and a green zero, although on American tables it often has an additional green double zero. Half the other numbers are coloured red and the other half black.
Okay, so if you bet on a specific number, you have a 1 in 37 chance of winning on a zero table and a 1 in 38 chance of winning on a table with a zero and a double zero.
Exactly, and a payout of 36 to 1 when you bet on a single number to come up. Now, that's a really crummy way of gambling if you want to lose the smallest possible amount of money while actually placing bets, which is what the launderer is after doing.
Yes, it is. But that's not the only bet you can make, is it?
No, it's not. You can bet on splits, which is two numbers. Triples, which is three numbers. A four-way, which is, well, you can work that out, I'm sure. Respectively, the odds on these are roughly just over 18 to 1, just over 12 to 1, and just over 9 to 1.
Okay, but that's still not very good. Now, then there's the bet on a sequence of numbers, like 1 to 12, which is now odds of just over 3 to 1. Better, but still no cigar.
And then there's the bet on red or black, or odds and evens, say. This brings the odds down to a shade over evens.
And to be clear, evens, an even chance, means that you lose on average every second bet.
Yeah, or to put it another way, given that occasionally the ball will land on zero, if you keep going long enough, you will slowly lose all your money. But now comes the clever bit. You work in pairs.
Yes, and always at the same table, of course, or this will not work.
Indeed. One always bets red, the other always bets black.
So one of them will always win, unless, of course, the ball lands on zero.
And as you get your stake back, you win the total of the two bets. Of course, this is pretty much the same as just one person doing it, but it does protect you against a long run of red or black disrupting the process, and, for the same stake, halves the laundering time required.
Indeed. But of course, this is rubbish if you're trying to win money, as over time you are guaranteed, as you say, to lose between you, as you can never win more than your combined stakes. But occasionally you will both lose when the ball lands on zeros.
And you almost certainly need a busy table, otherwise your method will stand out like a sore thumb.
Yes, and I think you'd probably want to change tables regularly as well.
Oh yes, using this method, assuming zero crops up approximately 1 in 37 spins, or 2.7% of the time, you get to keep 97.3% of your original stake as winnings, which will be paid out as a casino check when you cash your chips in.
Which, in money laundering terms, is a fantastic rate of return.
It certainly is. Of course, you could equally use odds and evens, because zero is neither of those as well. But croupiers are trained to watch out for this sort of betting and to react accordingly.
I guess you also have to watch out for people trying to bribe or coerce croupiers just not to notice.
Definitely, which is why most casinos have security cameras running on all their tables as a backup.
Yeah, do you know, I remember from my brief visit in Birmingham 22 years ago that they sometimes stopped the game and checked the camera to see if someone had placed their bet late.
Indeed. The croupier says, rien ne va plus, only with a better French accent.
Oh,
often.
That was very good, actually.
after which no more bets are permitted. But let's move on. The other popular game for use by money launderers is Baccarat.
Okay, that's not the female vocal duo, of course, who had a hit in the late 70s with the rather annoying single, I remember, called Yes, Sir, I Can Boogie.
I remember it surprisingly well, Graham, given my youth. No, they didn't have the T at the end like the card game. I do like a T at the end.
Oh, yes.
Although, did you know that that song is still one of the best-selling singles of all time, and possibly the biggest-selling single ever made by female artists, with sales of around 18 million copies.
That is absolutely extraordinary. Yeah. And no, I didn't see that coming, Ray. But don't mind me pointing out, it's got absolutely nothing to do with money laundering in a casino.
No, I have, unfortunately, wandered off topic slightly. Let's get back on. Let's move on and explain, for the benefit of our audience, how to play Baccarat.
Well, that'll be our audience and me as well, because I haven't got a clue either.
Okay, now, I think the first thing to say is that there are many variants all around the world, but we're going to be dealing with the most common version.
That works for me.
Oh, yes. We're nothing if not common. Indeed. Okay, now, Baccarat is a card game between the banker and the player. The banker has a bunch of decks, often between 6 and 8 of them, shuffled together and stored in a contraption known as a shoe.
Okay, presumably so many to stop card counting.
Well, I guess, but there are professional gamblers who still manage to tip the odds in their favour through both card counting and edge counting. But once again, this is outside the scope of the podcast, as are the finer points of playing the game. Suffice it to say that two players acting in concert can neutralise one set of losses with the other's gains by one betting with the player and the other betting with the house.
Right. So it kind of seems to me then that any form of gambling which has just two potential outcomes, maybe with a small margin built in for the house to make a profit, is susceptible to this form of laundering.
That's exactly right, Graham. And I suppose you could be even more sophisticated by having three or four accomplices betting on more complex outcomes.
Well, yes. If we go back to the roulette wheel, you could have, say, three people betting on each column of numbers, for example, or for each of the three number sequences, you know, 1 to 12, 13 to 24, 25 to 36.
Yeah, at a technical level, given that the returns are slightly worse than betting odds and evens or red and black, you would lose a bit more money. But on the other hand, it might be slightly harder to detect that at a busy table.
It's complicated, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that that word keeps cropping up in relation to money laundering?
Well, it is. Actually, I can't tell you how many times I've used the expression, complexity is the friend of the money launderer and the enemy of the investigator.
Repetition doesn't make it any less true, though.
No, I mean, it absolutely doesn't. Are there any other gaming methods that we ought to talk about, then?
Well, one of the other main ones is what used to be called one-armed bandits, which are now referred to, I believe, as gaming machines or slot machines.
Now, they feature a lot here in the UK within bookmakers' premises, don't they?
Well, they do, but we ought to point out that for those not familiar with British nomenclature, we're not referring to the makers of published literature, but premises on which you can primarily gamble on the outcome of horse races and other sporting events. The rest of the world calls these betting shops, I think.
I think you're right. But they have here in the UK also installed a large number of machines which are referred to as fixed odds betting terminals, or FOBTs.
And I understand they now account for a substantial proportion of the profits made by these establishments.
So I believe, Ray, and I think the attraction here is in those words, fixed odds.
Meaning they have highly predictable payouts over time.
They do. And speed. Mm. At one point, the maximum bet was £100 every 20 seconds. So you could funnel quite a lot of money through them in a very short space of time. Although I believe it has since been lowered to £2, which is quite a dramatic difference.
That's a significant reduction, isn't it? I've also read that at that time, each machine grossed about £900 a week, which equated to nearly £50,000 a year on one machine.
Yeah, and there were an estimated 33,300 machines in the UK at the time this research was published, which, if we apply those figures across the board, it means a total of more than £1.6 billion was going through them every year.
Although, for the sake of accuracy, we ought to point out these figures are a few years old and I suspect they're no longer wholly accurate.
Not with that reduction in the bet level, I think. Mm. No, but doesn't matter. One way or another, a lot of money gets fed into these slot machines. And we're not including, in this example, the ones that are in casinos and arcades and all sorts of other premises.
No. Lots of these machines are roulette simulators and the betting works in a similar way to the real thing, but with a bit of an interesting difference.
Oh, which is?
Well, let's say you bet £40 on red, £40 on black and £4 on zero on the same spin.
Oh, OK, so the machines let you bet on zero.
Well, so I understand, Graham. I've never actually been inside a betting shop, so I can't say from personal experience, but it's what I've read.
Well, I'm happy to take your word for it, Ray.
Oh, good.
So there are three potential outcomes when you spin.
Mm. So
financially, what are the results?
Well, if it lands on either black or red, you get your stake plus the same again, so you lose £4.
And if it lands on zero?
The machine returns £144.
Very nice. That's a win for the launderer, isn't it?
Not in the long run, Graham, but yes. Short term, yes.
Okay, but we need to reiterate, Ray, that FOBTs in betting shops are now much more limited in terms of the amount you can bet.
But certainly at one point, you could actually transfer your winnings, so-called winnings, directly to a debit card where it would appear as coming from a nationally known bookmaker. And it becomes easy to pass the money off as exactly what it appears to be, winnings.
Simple. Now, we haven't looked at one of the more prosaic ways of using these machines to launder money.
Which is?
Well, you just load it up with a stack of cash, have a couple of goes, and then cash it out. The chances are it will either pay out in in-house tokens, or it will give you a printed receipt for the balance, which you then just request a bank transfer or a check for.
Easy as you like.
Yes. Of course, none of these are new to the casinos, betting shops, and other places of gambling, but that doesn't always mean you can't get away with it anymore.
True. I mean, I have to tell you, though, Graham, I am a bit disappointed with this.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, it's just that I feel that when we agreed to look at casino laundering, I got all dressed up. I was promised glamour, risk, a certain element of daring do, Graham. But all we've looked at here is reliable, conservative returns, and I feel cheated, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, I kind of get that, but that is how it is, Ray. Professional money launderers are just incredibly risk-averse, odd as it may seem. They're only going to walk into a casino if they have a clear estimate of what they'll be walking out with.
So none of them throw caution to the wind?
Not with money they're laundering for criminals, Ray. Some of the criminals can get nasty if you let them down.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Remember that virtually all large-scale money laundering is done by specialist gangs, not by the criminals who generated the proceeds of crime. But you do make a good point, which you know, to be fair, you do fairly regularly.
Well, it's very kind of you to say so, Graham.
No, it's absolutely true. But occasionally, of course, you do encounter a criminal who is big enough to have a go on his or her own. If it's their own money they're playing with, maybe they'll be happy to spice things up and take more of a risk.
Yeah, because even if they come out with a big loss, at least they've gained the ability to use the money they do come out with, which now looks legit.
That's right. They're easily caught, though.
Well, how, Graham? I mean, what's the difference between an actual high-rolling gambler and someone who's just laundering their own criminal funds?
Well, because the high roller cares when they lose, Ray. If I can paraphrase Kipling, as I do all the time, and that's the author and not the people who make the cakes.
Oh, exceedingly good cakes.
They are, but, quotes, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, then, my son, you're a criminal laundering your own money.
Fascinating, Graham. And we should point out that if you want to know more about gambling-based typologies, there are some very good reports out there. One by the Financial Action Task Force, the FATF, called Vulnerabilities of Casinos and Gaming Sector, and another by the Council of Europe on the Use of Online Gambling for Money Laundering Purposes.
Well, that is really good to know.
And another report that we really shouldn't end this episode without making reference to is the Cullen Commission in British Columbia. Now, you gave evidence to them on our behalf. Do you want to explain about that?
Well, yes, I will. So the commission is properly entitled Commission of Inquiry into Money Laundering in British Columbia, but it is more popularly known as the Cullen Commission because it's headed by a gentleman called Austin Cullen, who's a former Canadian High Court judge and prosecutor. Now, the public hearings of the commission began in February 2020, following reports that in 2018, more than $47 billion was laundered in Canada, much of it through gambling.
So this isn't just a theoretical set of typologies we've been talking about, then?
Absolutely not, Ray. The report was commissioned by the government of British Columbia, which also estimated that around $7.4 billion of that $47 billion was laundered through British Columbia on its own.
British Columbia, of course, being the home state of Vancouver, noted for ultra-high net worth individuals and a booming casino industry.
Yeah, an association which, surprisingly, is not that uncommon, sadly. Anyway, the commission is still running well over a year later, partly due to COVID and partly because, as the evidence has emerged, more witnesses have been called.
Including us. What did they particularly want to know about?
Well, specifically, how Canadian companies have been used within global laundromats. And as you know, Ray, between us, we have done a few presentations over the last few years which have identified Canadian limited partnerships specifically within laundering networks. And they were very keen to hear more alongside our views on open registries and transparent beneficial ownership information.
Which I think are fairly well known to our listeners. Were those views well received by the Commission?
Well, not by everyone, I'd have to say. There is a very strong and highly assertive population in Canada who believe that personal privacy is paramount, and they really don't like the idea of open registers or of beneficial ownership being made public.
Mm. Who do you think is going to win that discussion?
Well, only time will tell, Ray. I think the commission is not now expected to wind down before September at the earliest, and then they'll need time to prepare its report. So it'll be a while yet before we find out.
And in the meantime, Graham, we've taken rather longer than anticipated to walk through gambling typologies. I think we got a bit distracted, perhaps. Mm. So I think auction houses, fine art, and other high-end goods will have to wait for next time. I'll have to keep this silly suit on.
It kind of suits you. Oh, excuse the pun.
It's kind of you to say so, Graham.
That's I particularly like the little flashing red light that's on your flower.
I don't leave home without it these days.
Why wouldn't you? I think you're right, Ray. And if we're going to do this segment properly, we need to allow sufficient time for the explanations.
Well, I, for one, am looking forward to it.